earthen treasures, treasures in general, but we're talking about earthen treasures and how those compare to heavenly treasures. But mostly today we're just talking about how these things can get in our way. And I was thinking today that wasn't the intent of the lesson, but we saw an example of where the things of this life get in the way, things we covet get in the way of our ability to serve God correctly. And just like David confessed sin, so should we. And in this case, when we look at this and we've gone through this, we read that about where he talked about us having that. I put these back up in case there would be those in our presence that weren't in the first assembly. So as we've studied this and we continue to study it, now we're going to look at earthen treasures as they should be appreciated and how we should look at them and how we should understand. We're going to do the same thing. It's going to be back to the book of Ecclesiastes. So let's go there. Ecclesiastes chapter 2 again. After he's talked about the fact that I don't know who I'm going to leave it to, and he's all concerned about that, he says this: there's nothing better for a man that he should eat and drink, that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? So as he realizes all those things don't really mean much, but there are some basic things in life that mean tremendous things to us. So as he talks about this, for God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight, but to the sinner he gives a work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. He said the truth of the matter is, when you look at it, and go to chapter 8, verse 15 real quick, and then So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry, for this will remain with him in his labor for the days of his life which God gives him under the sun. True pleasure is eating and drinking the things God has provided. You know, you ever do this? You go to work, and when that lunch break comes, how much that means to you? The enjoyment maybe of sitting down with someone else, or maybe just the enjoyment of sitting there eating a meal and thanking God for it, and being before God as you eat that meal and think of just such a small pleasure in life, but what a wonderful thing it is to be able to have that food. And I think of that, sometimes we put emphasis on the big things in life, but we forget the small things in life. And that's what he's saying. If you really appreciate things, you'll understand these things, that the basics are what it's all about. True appreciation is understanding it comes from the hand of God. It's not of our own doing. We did not in and of ourselves do any of this. We don't really provide it. We just take advantage of things that God's already put here. True appreciation, he says, brings wisdom, knowledge, and joy. And it does. If we truly understand where all of these things in life that we put so much emphasis in, we'll understand that. So he says, the righteous will receive from the gatherer and the collector. Basically, it goes along with what he said, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. They truly understand what it's all about. We indeed do get it from all of those people because we truly understand it and use it wisely. Chapter 4, after he had talked to them again about how this one who had no one in his life, all he had in his life was seeking after the pleasures of this life, seeking after having things. This is what God says through Solomon is more important. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who's alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. What he says is, riches aren't worth it. People are worth it. People in your lives are worth it. People make the difference. I don't care how much you might fuss and argue with the one you love the most online in this life. They're worth it. It's worth every minute of it because of what you gain from it. True appreciation understands true treasure. We are treasured with people around us that mean so very much to us. Sharing our lives with others means others will help in time of need. They'll be there for us, and we can be there for them. Money can't buy that. Oh, you can get all the people in the world if you've got money to come and do things, but they're only doing it for the money. These people are doing it because they love you, which is more important, he said. Which is a true treasure? Well, it's obvious the people in their life that God put there. Strength comes in others, not wealth. True strength comes from being united together. We are strong as a group of God's people. We can stand for what's right. And we see a small group, maybe like Philadelphia, that stood for what was right. Ecclesiastes 5:12. Again, talking about the person who loves it, can't sleep, just gives it away to everybody. But the sleep of a laboring man is sweet, whether he is little or much. But the abundance of the rich will not permit him to sleep. The truth is, he said, the sleep of a laboring man is sweet. You know why? Because you know you've done the best you can. You've worked all day for what you needed to provide for you and your family. You're not concerned about overdoing it. You're not going to hoard it. You're going to use it wisely. So you can lay down knowing you haven't deprived someone of something or concerned about someone that you've maybe is in your employ is going to be taking up a lot of what you already have. And that's what he's saying is the difference. One who works for what he has sleeps without concern, whether he has much or little to eat. You see, it's not a matter of, oh, you know what, I need X amount. He said, you're just going to be happy with what you have because you understand where it came from and you understand what it's all about. Ecclesiastes 5:18-20. Here's what I've seen. It is good and fitting for one to eat and drink and to enjoy the good of all of his labor in which he toils under the sun all the days of his life which God gives it, for it is his heritage. As for every man to whom God has given riches and wealth and given him power to eat of it, to receive his heritage and rejoice in his labor, this is a gift of God. In other words, if a person has things and they understand where they come from and they use them wisely, it's a heritage from God. Totally different. For he will not dwell unduly all on the days of his life because God keeps him busy with the joy of his heart. Which one would you rather be busy with? The joy of your heart? Rejoicing every day? Just like he asks to do. Just like he says we can in prayer in Philippians 4. Working for what we have brings greater appreciation. One can truly enjoy the basic things of life. He said even this rich person can understand the joys of sitting down and eating with someone. Can enjoy the things of life. Can have joy in their life. Because they really realize it comes from God. It's not really theirs anyway. That just takes all the load off of you. You don't have to worry about it anymore. Just turn it over to Him when problems come up. God is the one who blesses one with riches and wealth. It's God. It's not that person. It is God. God is the one who blesses one to enjoy it. It's not us. You know, I got that. No, God blessed you with it. He does not, this person does not live in the past, but has joy for the present. Does not dwell on the past at all, he says. He doesn't even concern himself with those things. He is not concerned about the future. He's concerned about right now, if you want to call it concern. He's just living to enjoy life right now. Ecclesiastes 6:8-9. He talks about this. For what more has the wise man than the fool? What does the poor man have who knows how to walk before the living? What is it that poor person has that actually knows how to walk before the living? Better is the sight of the eyes than the wandering of desire. This also is vanity and grasping of the wind. With what he has is what this poor man knows, not what he sees. You see, he understands that what he has is God has blessed him with. He can use that. He can't concern himself with what Mike has or with what I have. You see, he's living it for what he has. Because if he doesn't, he might covet. He doesn't chase the wind. He doesn't chase after things he cannot possibly have. He doesn't concern himself with those things. He understands it's important to be thankful for what he does have. Ecclesiastes 10:18. Because of laziness, the building decays, and through idleness of hands, the house leaks. He's talking about the fact that he's been talking about the king, and certainly he's talking about a country just losing everything, but in a more specific application, he's letting it be known that it's hard work that keeps things together. That in reality, if we understand that God put us here to work for what we have, then we can understand that. Not to just receive it from someone else, but we have the responsibility of going out and obtaining these, if you will, earthen treasures. It is up to us to obtain them rightfully. We don't covet them, but we know that we have certain needs. He that provides not for his own has denied the faith and worse than an infidel. So we do have this responsibility to take care of it, but it has to be through labor. Because he says, you can't be lazy. He's not condoning laziness when he's talking about all these rich people that obtain it improperly or through covetousness. Or not even necessarily the rich, but the ones that want. They won't allow things to fall apart around them. It's interesting because if you have other translations, it'll talk about the rapture is actually falling in. Have you ever seen someone that just wouldn't take care of anything that God had given them? Just let it fall apart. And I'm not talking about everything has to be perfectly kept, but I am talking about it needs to be taken care of. And that's what God is saying. If you appreciate what God gave you, you will take care of it. In addition, it will be shared. One of the most beautiful passages in the book of Ecclesiastes, and I know I've talked fast because I thought I had last time, so we may get out of this fairly early today. Ecclesiastes 11, so you can covet your time. Verses 1 and 2. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to 7 and also to 8, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. Depending on your translation, you can have everything in this from, it literally will say, give of what you have to others, or it will say, invest wisely. So I'm just going to give you all of those. I understand that in this. But what he's basically saying with this is that it needs to be taken care of. That it is our responsibility to take care of what we've been blessed with. It needs to be used wisely. I would tend to think in the context of this, after talking about so much about riches, that it is probably more correct, the translation, for it to be sharing with others. In other words, you're not going to lose your bread because you give it to someone else. It'll be returned to you. It is more blessed to give than to receive. That in reality, it is wise to do that. And if it's talking about the other, it still would be for us to use it properly so that we can have it to give to others. But again, I think Solomon is more talking about the idea of sharing it with others. And he said it will be restored in many ways. In other words, the more that you give, in a way, the more blessed you are. Oh, does that mean, as some would teach, that if I will give $10, I get $100 back? Absolutely not. I may never get the 10 back. It's not the point here. I get it in ways you cannot name. It is just the fact that our doing good blesses us, period. It will always work that way. It is more blessed to give than receive. I think of those of Macedonia and others that gave more than they had. They literally did without so others could have. That's the thought process. And it will be obtained and used with wisdom. Now this is very key. This is not covetousness. He's explaining how this could be done. If the clouds are full of rain, by the way, again, this whole section, if you would be willing to go, if you've got other translations, I will recommend you go back and read these first 6 verses of Ecclesiastes 11, and you will find lots of variations in it, but I don't think it changes the meaning, so I will just tell you that up front. And if you're wondering why that happens, because some of these Hebrew words are very difficult to translate in the way God may have wanted, but it doesn't change the meaning. If the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. If a tree falls to the south or to the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. He who observes the wind will not sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. As you do not know what is the way of the wind or the spirit, or how the bones grow in the wombs of her who is with child, so you do not know the works of God who makes all things. In the morning sow your seed, and in the evening do not withhold your hand, for you do not know which will prosper, either this or that, or whether both alike will be good. Solomon is saying, basically this, you just do it. And you can't just concentrate on one thing. There are many things in life and you must deal with them all. If you expect to be blessed from God, just go out and do what you need to do to be blessed by God. Don't just sit at home expecting all these things to come your way, as seemingly so many people do, thinking that they have the right to sit at home and others take care of them. He said, that's not right. What he's basically saying in this is this. There are certain things in verse 3 that you have no control over. You can't control the clouds. You can't know for sure. Yeah, I know, weathermen do it, right? Yeah, no. They try to predict on the basis of what's already there, but they don't even know for sure. just going to happen from time to time. There's going to be rainfall. And rainfall comes, and he's talking more in a greater sense of there are things that happen that we have no control over that are not good for us. They can cause difficulty. Like if a tree falls, we can't control that tree. We can't sit there and go, oh, you fall that way or fall this way. It's going to fall the way it does, and it's going to lay the way it does. And there's not a thing we can do about that. So he said, so up front, don't concern yourself with that. Secondly, don't look for excuses. Don't look out and go, I can't do that. And there's other passages in Proverbs talk about that. You know, there's a lion in the street and all this. I can't get up and I can't lift my hand to my mouth and I'm just too lazy to do anything. But he said, don't do that. Don't do that. So you don't go out and sow because just in case the wind came up, you might be sowing in the seed to get away from it. See, no, don't do that. Or when you look at it, yeah, it could possibly be when you go out to gather up your harvest, it might rain. So don't let that deter you. Just do what you need to do. When this comes down to it, if you really appreciate what God has given, you'll go out and diligently seek it. You will try your best. You will work hard at what you do. Again, a man like an Abraham who did that. A man who had plenty. A man that we can look at like a Joseph. Didn't look for excuses. Went out and did it with all of the rain, with all the things in his life. He did it. Understand that God's in control. Now here's where it comes up. In this particular verse, it's either talking about the spirit, we don't know how the spirit or the life comes into the child when it's conceived, or we don't know about the wind. Either one's okay, because I don't know about either one of them. One of the questions that I was asked many years ago was describe the wind, and that's just like, you're kidding me. It was for a job interview. And I was thinking of all the questions you could ask. That's a good one. I'd be like, okay, describe your spirit. You just stand there. I mean, I can't see your spirit. I believe it's there. And, you know, I know the wind causes problems, but what is it? I can feel it, but that's about it. When we think about this, it doesn't really matter with certain things. We don't fully understand them. We can talk about life. And scientists can say, oh, we can do this. They can't. They can have all the things that are necessary for life, but they can't produce life. You see, God does that. And there are things in life that we can't do. There are things in life that we need to understand that God is in control. When we plant things, it's God that's in control. And He says, just go out and do it. If you appreciate what I've given you, do it. I'm not going to just put it in your hands. You have a need to go out and earn it for yourself. And He clearly says, you just do your part and God do what is necessary. In the morning, just sow your seed. Leave it in the hands of God. You see, our problem is we either want to take it all on ourselves, or we want to be covetous, or we want all these other... He said, no, just put all that aside. The truth is, he said, it is good and wise. Like if you're going to plant things, we planted several things in our garden. Some did well, some did not so well. So what do we harvest? The things that did well. Whose hands was it in? God's hands completely. I could not go out there and make any of that stuff. I don't care how many times Linda went out there and talked to those plants. They did not produce. And she talked to them too. But they don't produce. But we did thank God for what was produced. So in our lives, the conclusion is this. We just need to do what's right. And we need to appreciate it, even those basic things in life. When we sit down and are able to partake of things from a basic garden, or go to the grocery store, we need to have true appreciation for them and thank God. Because I'm going to tell you something. That's the true treasures of life. When we sit down with friends, or we sit down with our spouses, or we sit down with our children, that's the true joy in life. Those are the things that have everlasting consequences. I don't care. It's that old thing about how much money did he leave? He left it all. As we just read, you came into this world with no clothes on. And basically, that's the way you're going to go out. So, Abe, if you think it's going to be any other way, I don't care how much you might desire and covet the things of this life, if you ever put them before God, Abe, you are going to lose your soul. Life on the sun, that is on earth, can be empty if we do not understand the true treasures or riches. One who covets will never be happy. How do I know that? Because I don't care what I covet. If I want a certain car, there's another one out there that I want. That's amazing, isn't it? After you've had that for a while, it's like the newness wears off and I need another one. And then the newness wears off and I need another one. We do that with everything in life, unfortunately. One who truly understands what life is all about will appreciate fully the things of this life. Say a happy home, a good meal, friends, and an understanding of who is in control. If we could ever get it through our thick skulls and just, if we've got any concern, put it on Him. He'll take care of it for me. I don't have to. Pray about it. Oh, well, you know, and I want to say this right in the middle of this. There have been things in my life that had some concern about. And I prayed. And I waited. And I prayed. And I waited. And I prayed. And I waited. And something just recently happened that I've been praying about for several months. And it happened. But see, it happens in God's time. I don't have control over certain things. And that's why we should be thankful. He's in control. One who truly understands what life is all about will not hoard his goods, but will use them for his own good and the good of others. The greatest treasure of all is what we partook of this morning, the death, the burial, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. There is no greater treasure on this earth. There is no greater thing that we can look to. It will forgive us of everything, every sin that we properly take care of. His sacrifice makes it for us to have a great life here. But a hope for a much greater life when this life is over. The treasures of this life are nothing. When we get to the lesson about the treasures we'll have after this life, that is truly greater. But to get that treasure, you have to believe that Christ is the Son of God. You have to repent. You have to confess Him as the Christ and then be immersed in water for the remission of sins. Then one must live faithfully until death. One who's been baptized and now living in sin must repent of that sin, confess that sin, and either pray for that sin or have someone pray for them. You need to change your life today. We're going to stand and sing a song. We're going to encourage everyone, anyone that needs to make things right, to please do so. We'll help you in any way we can. Would you please come while we stand and sing?